Good morning. We're going to start the Climate Protection Committee meeting. Today is November 17th, 2016. Marcy, if you could please call the roll.
Good morning. On the roll for the Climate Protection Committee meeting of November 17th, 2016, Director Barrett.
Here.
Director Canepa. Director Joya. Director Haggerty. Director Rice.
Here.
Director Ross. Director Sink. Committee Vice Chair Avalos.
Here.
Committee Chair Pepper. We do not yet have a quorum.
Okay. Given that we don't have a quorum, we will hold off on our minutes until we do, or if we do. Let's go to item number two, public comment on non-agenda items. Do we have any cards? Yes, I have two cards for item number two. First up is Janet Stromberg, and then after Ms. Stromberg is Jed Holtzman.
Good morning, members of the committee. I'm just a quick note. I noticed someone sent me slide decks from CARB's scoping plan meeting they had recently, and I was really excited to see that they are now really welcoming the work of local jurisdictions in meeting the 2030 goals. So I just wanted to come up and recognize that and look forward to working with all of you on helping the Air District get the help with those goals. Thanks.
Thank you. And that seemed to come out loud and clear yesterday, too. It's great to have reinforcement today. Thanks. Mr. Holtzman.
Thank you, Chair Avalos and present directors. I guess I'll mostly just say this into the record. The regional climate protection strategy, in theory, final version will be probably coming out in December, and workshops will be held in January. I know the makeup of the board and this committee is probably going to change substantially. And we're hoping, Jed Holtzman, 350 Bay Area, sorry, we're hoping that the Climate Protection Committee will be a major source of oversight, guidance, ideas, capacity building for the Regional Climate Protection Strategy. Obviously, you know, rules that will go forward will have to go through the Stationary Source Committee following Air District policies, but I think that the Climate Protection Committee has not just a role to play, but I think should be probably the primary role in terms of queuing things up and kind of building that out and getting it to a point where the Stationary Source Committee can act. So we're really hoping that Chair Pepper, who we have reached out to but have not heard back from, and remaining members of the committee will gladly take on that mantle, and we would love to discuss that with remaining members of the committee going forward. The other thing that I would just say is that in this extremely wayward time in which we suddenly find ourselves with a potential national cancellation of really important climate action that we potentially can't afford, regional and local action will be even more critical than it already was. And I think what we're going to be doing here with the Regional Climate Protection Strategy literally will be the most active, forward-looking, and inspiring thing to people all around this country who are feeling total despair and desperation in terms of climate action. So it's really critical that we move this forward and make it as robust as possible. I would also just like to highlight Director Avalos. We worked together over the last several months, mostly his office doing the work, to prohibit future fossil fuel extraction from city-owned land. San Francisco does actually have an operating oil well in Kern County, which we have been getting revenue from since the 40s. I found this out through a public records request, and Supervisor Avalos in San Francisco acted to can that. This is the kind of action that we're going to be needing to take from the bottom up, and then for the Air District to take from the top down. And I'm hopeful that we can provide an example for the rest of the country, which will actually mean something now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Holtzman. And thank you for your work on our Keep It in the Ground ordinance. Your sleuthing has been really paid off. Thank you. Okay, that is our, any other member of the public who wanted to comment? Seeing none? Gene, did you have anything to add?
I'm just getting ready for the next item.
So. Okay, great. So let's go on to, we'll skip over our minutes and go on to our next item, number four. Solar energy master plans for Bay Area schools.
Good morning, Chair Avalos, members of the Climate Protection Committee. I think the committee is aware that an important part of the district's climate protection activities is to increase renewable energy. And so one of the projects we've been working on, the Air District partnered with a nonprofit, Kyoto USA, to grow solar energy at Bay Area schools. And we're really excited about the project and the progress that we've seen. And so today, Tom Kelly is the executive director and co-founder of Kyoto USA, and he's kind enough to join us and will brief the committee on this project.
Thank you, Henry, and good morning, everyone. I'd first like to start by thanking the Air District for making it possible for us to continue this work over the past year and providing assistance and consultation to the school districts in the Bay Area. I'd also like to thank Abby Young on staff and for her guidance throughout this whole process. It's been very helpful. Kyoto USA started in 2004 in response to the U.S.'s inability or unwillingness to really do anything substantial on climate change. And we started by getting the city of Berkeley to ratify the Kyoto Protocol. And in doing so, eventually led to over 1,100 cities in the United States signing on to the Climate Protection Agreement that was supported initially by Mayor Nichols from Seattle, but also then picked up by the U.S. Mayors Association. Part of our main focus is to try and get folks to get involved locally in things that they can actually make an impact on. And for us, schools have been really the most important place in our communities where we can do a number of things that have a variety of benefits that accrue to all of us. I'll go through this and point some of those out, but in 2009, we received a technical assistance grant from the Department of Energy to develop a solar master plan concept for school districts. And the reason we did that is that school districts generally, in their facilities area, only build according to their master plans. And if you have projects that are outside that plan that you want to encourage or advocate for, they probably are generally not likely to make it in just because the funding isn't usually available for it. So by developing solar master plans for school districts, we've encouraged them to integrate those solar master plans into their overall facilities master plan so that it actually becomes a planning tool for them. On this slide, I just want to point out as an aside that school districts started by putting solar on rooftops and soon moved to putting them in parking lots because they're actually easier to get permitted and although a little bit more expensive, the installations actually go much more smoothly. But we're actually seeing a lot more of these structures you see on the left, these shade structures that are being placed on campuses where kids can get together during the day, during lunch and everything. And I have to tell you that the temperature under those panels is chilly at times. I mean, it really has an impact.
They don't look too bad either.
They look great. And, you know, you can build them high enough to get school buses under and everything. So it's really, really remarkable technology. So the Bay Area has 159 school districts. There's a district in West Marin that has 8 or 9 students in a single school. And then we have places like Oakland, San Jose that have hundreds of schools and serve many thousands of children. You're probably aware that when a school district goes out for a bond, it looks to see what it needs to get done in terms of facilities, and generally their needs far outstrip their ability to be able to find funding for it. So there's a lot of competition on in school districts for construction funds, and part of what we've tried to do is demonstrate the value of solar as being part of that plan. School districts, as you probably are aware, are understaffed. They have their main mission is to educate our children. It's not really their mission to look at building solar panels on the roofs and everything. So there's a general lack of knowledge and expertise within the school districts that can sometimes actually work against them, especially when they're approached very aggressively by vendors who want to encourage them to install solar on their in their schools. So our efforts with school districts are really to get out there before anything significant takes place in terms of educating school district staff and officials about how these solar projects work. Demonstrate to them the financial benefits of solar, and we do, you'll see in a moment, a demonstration of the analysis we provide. We always encourage the districts to put their projects out to bid so that they're not sole sourcing projects to any single vendor. We find that when they do that, they get much better pricing, they get much more competitive results, and installers are willing to throw in more things than they would if they were basically just given the project directly. So when we started this back in 2009, the economics still weren't great. We had the California Solar Initiative, which helped make the economics a little bit better. But over the last 3 or 4 years, the price of solar has come down so dramatically. And the price of electricity in PG&E service territory is fairly high. And so the economics at this point work for just about any school district in the Bay Area. The savings are substantial, and the savings all go to the district's general fund that can be used for teachers and programs and after-school efforts as well. So. We're also looking at greenhouse gas emissions. Have to say that that isn't the big sales point when you go to school districts. You have to get them on the economics first before you start talking about environmental or educational benefits. But once you make that case on the economics and they begin to realize how beneficial it is in that regard, you see the districts begin to embrace these other aspects of the benefits. And also, for me, one of the most important things is with climate change, is that you know, our kids are worried about this, and they need to see people in their communities doing something substantial about it. And for me personally, seeing solar panels in a parking lot in a school is one of the most important things that we can all do together. So one of the big impediments at the beginning was funding, but I think by and large, we have found ways to make these projects work based on what's available to school districts. So these aren't ranked in any particular order, but certainly the use of a general obligation bond by a school district is the best way to approach this. All the savings that they achieve go into their general fund. There's no cost to them in terms of the paying off the panels. That's done by local businesses and residents through their property assessments. Prop 51 just passed in November. This puts $9 billion back into the funds for new schools and modernization. And the cool thing about this is it basically doesn't start the program all over again, but actually starts where the program left off when it ran out of funds. So school districts that have schools that need modernization or new classrooms now can get back in the queue for funding. That Prop 51 money can be used for solar renewable projects as well. At the federal level, we have clean renewable energy bonds and qualified zone academy bonds. They're basically, in terms of interest rates, about the same, but there's a little bit different criteria for each. But both have been used successfully by school districts throughout the state, and even though they have to pay that money back with interest, they're still able to provide a positive revenue flow for their general funds. The California Energy Commission offers low-interest loans. There's not always money available for that, but it is replenished from time to time by the loans that are repaid and by also acts of the legislature to put more money in it. But from time to time, the school districts can actually get that money. Prop 39 is another source of funding for renewable energy, tax-exempt lease financing, cash reserves. And generally what you'll see is that school districts will use a variety of sources when they actually go out into the market to buy these. And finally, I'll point out, we've never been a big fan of power purchase agreements for school districts, very complicated transactions. There were always escalation rates in there on the costs that sometimes didn't make a lot of sense. But the power purchase agreements that we're seeing nowadays lock in a price. The last one we saw was about just under 15 cents a kilowatt hour and stayed that way for 20 years, which, for a school district is a remarkable opportunity. Plus, they don't have to put anything up really up front, and the systems are maintained and operated by the third-party investor.
But we're seeing, though, that since the cost of solar has gone down dramatically, do those long-term power purchase agreements still work?
They do. In part for school districts, it has to do with their reluctance to get too deeply involved in the transaction itself. I mean, it becomes very appealing when someone comes to you and they say, we'll do all the work for you, you know. And so we do try to encourage districts when they are speccing these projects to look at both ownership and power purchase, get a professional assessment and analysis on the two so that they can actually make a decision as to which way they think will be better. Plus, these agreements can run for 20 years, but there are points during that 20 years or less where the district can buy the systems out if they have the funding to be able to do that. This is the cover of the document that we deliver to school districts who we're in contact with. This is from Novato Unified. We completed 19 full solar master plans during the contract period. We sent out 48 or 49, what we call samplers, basically this concept, but we took two schools, estimated their consumption, energy consumption and its cost, and then ran the financials and everything for them just to demonstrate to the school districts what we could do for them if they wanted to engage us for a full solar master plan. And I'll just point out that because of the Air District's support, we've been able to provide this assistance to school districts without any cost. Some of these slides are going to be hard to see, but basically what we do is we do an assessment of the solar capacity and we look at the consumption for a particular site, and from those two data points we're able to determine how much solar they'll need, how much the savings will be, and everything kind of builds off of that. What I think is interesting here, and perhaps you'll pass this on to Director Pepper, is that a lot of schools have way more capacity than they need in terms of the actual solar itself. This school is an elementary school. It needs about 90 kilowatts of solar, but it has basically the capacity for 250 kilowatts. So you realize that our school districts have a lot of property, they have a lot of parking lots if they're not in space-constrained urban areas. And if there was some way, for example, through a community choice program through feed-in tariffs or something different than what we're used to, there may be a way to actually encourage schools to build out their systems so that we get far more local generation and rely less and less on electricity brought in from further out. I'm going to skip past this. The little bubbles there are going to be called out in the next slides, but this is an example of the assessment we do for the districts to show them what the economic benefit will be. What we do is we look at every facility in the district. We get system sizes. We look at the energy costs and consumption, and we come up with a table like this that demonstrates how much solar would have to be installed throughout the district. So here for Novato, it was 1.6 megawatts. We estimate the price, which is the price we have up there at $4.85 a watt, is actually probably far more expensive than the bids that school districts are receiving now. But one of our objectives is to provide a very conservative estimate, not try to make this look too rosy for them, make sure that when they do go out to bid with these projects, that they're not surprised by them, that they actually hopefully see the bids come in at a lower cost per watt. We know how much electricity these panels can generate. We know how much they degrade over time. We know what the estimated cost, avoided cost of the electricity is. We build in an escalation. So, and also, because districts don't do their own maintenance on these systems, we build in the cost of a contract for operations and maintenance. So somebody comes out annually to clean and maintain the panels as well. Should also point out that we include the cost of a performance guarantee in our analysis, which means that the installer guarantees a certain level of output from these panels so that the district knows ahead of time exactly what they're going to get from these panels. If it falls below that guarantee, then it's up to the vendor to compensate the district for the shortfall. In Novato's case, for the, I think it's 14 schools, turnkey price is just under $8 million. In this estimate, we looked at using a CEC low interest loan and a GO bond to actually finance the installation. This will show you what the economic benefit to the district would have been over a 20-year period if they had put solar on each of those schools in the sizes that were demonstrated in the assessment. And you can see that over 20 years, the total economic benefit, this is after they paid off the CEC loan, is over $6 million. And just want to point out, you know, we don't talk about these panels lasting forever, but the first solar panel that was ever produced in the 50s is still generating electricity. I mean, these panels do continue to produce electricity long beyond the 20-year guarantees that the providers, the panels come with. So in Novato, Novato went out for a bid. They used a procurement consultant that we recommended to them to actually put the project together. They decided to go with a power purchase agreement through Solar City. And as you can see here, they're purchasing electricity from that system at just under 15 cents a kilowatt hour. And you can see that the estimated savings over 20 years is still substantial. And of course, all you'll see in a future slide, you know, the impacts of the CO2 reduction and other air contaminants. San Ramon Valley Unified was a project that we got started on in 2009 with the help of a couple of students there. And Lisa Mason is in the audience, and I think she'll comment afterward about that process. But San Ramon Valley purchased 3.7 megawatts of solar in 2011. And they're now going through a phase two process where they're adding another 3 or 4 megawatts to the additional 15 schools in the district. And the amazing thing is that they are generating incredible savings, and yet they used a qualified school construction bond to finance the first phase, and they're using a clean renewable energy bond to finance the second phase. So they're actually paying for this via a bond from made available by the federal government. Here's a demonstration of, you can actually go on their website and see this is all in real time, but in terms of the CO2 avoided and the nitrogen oxide, sulfur oxides as well. We've also done a little bit of work on during the worst days of the drought, which are probably not over, but when it was much more in the news, to demonstrate that the use of renewable power from solar is actually a big water savings as well in terms of the electricity that's generated through natural gas and everything. There's a process that involves water there that is not necessary for the production of electricity through solar. So there's actually, over time, water savings to be achieved as well. So I mentioned that we had done 19 full solar master plans and the 49 samplers. At this point in time, there are 50 individual schools that we've worked with through their districts that are in the process of installing solar. Of those 19 school districts that we did the solar master plans for, you can see there's considerable benefits to achieve there. And I would say that in general, if a district goes so far as to get involved in working with us on a solar master plan, that at some point in the future, they're going to do solar. And just in 2014, we did a solar master plan for San Rafael City Schools. And tomorrow or Monday, I'll be meeting with them to talk about solar there. So 2 years later, you know, that ball has been moved forward. So one of the big lessons here for us has always been, you got to be patient, but persistent. All the schools in the Bay Area are going to have solar on it at some point in the future. We just try to help the districts understand that they're going to do that eventually. So why don't we do it now? And finally, this is a group photo from Rosa Parks in Berkeley, a 50-kilowatt system. The great thing about this is, in addition to all the fun we had in celebrating that, is that it's what's called a ballasted system. It doesn't penetrate the roof at all. It just lays on the top of the roof. And so it's actually a little bit cheaper to install, and it's a little bit easier to get it permitted and everything. But it was a great day, and that's it. I thank you for all your contribution to this effort. It's been great. Thank you.
Questions, Teresa?
Well, more of a comment. You raised the fact that a lot of schools have a lot more capacity to generate, to put up solar arrays than they actually need at the school.
Yes.
There are several areas in the nine counties that the Air District serves that have community choice aggregates. Mm-hmm. And so I think it would be really a good partnership to speak with Sonoma Clean Power mm-hmm. or Marin Energy or Cupertino's, San Francisco's, mm-hmm. to get them to work with their school districts to generate that extra power for the local power mm-hmm. companies. I mean, I think that that really would be a partnership that would benefit yeah. everybody.
We're working in Alameda County on the development of their community choice program. And one of the big pushes from the stakeholders is to try and build as much power in Alameda County, Contra Costa County, as possible so that we not only develop it economically, but also make sure that the power is delivered close to the source of, I mean, where it's used. The existing community choice programs offer an incentive on the net energy metering tariff. That's usually a penny a kilowatt hour for electricity that's exported to the grid. In Contra Costa County, that has three schools only that were in the Marin service territory, Marin Clean Energy, they received a check for $27,000 last year for that excess electricity. So you can just imagine what we might be able to do if we get a little bit more creative with our schools.
Exactly. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my area, Fremont Union High School District, serving West San Jose and Cupertino and Sunnyvale, put this in some years ago, and they recognized that for them, raising long-term capital was fairly easy compared to operating funds. So mm-hmm. so they went and they decided to buy, mm-hmm. and maybe they were early based on the fact that solar's been falling, but they have really been a reference point for our mm-hmm. community. And is it still the case that PG&E won't cut a check at the end of the year for those who generate more solar than they that provide net?
So it gets a little complicated here. What happens is that even in your residential solar, you generate enough electricity to offset your electricity bill. But it's not one for one. It's not 1 kilowatt hour for 1 kilowatt hour. The sure. value of electricity changes from time of year and everything. So for schools, and this is the beauty of it, schools are closed in the summer for the most part. So everything they're generating is pretty much being pumped back onto the grid, and they're getting a retail credit for that electricity.
Right.
And then they're using it in the wintertime when rates are lower and everything. What a school or anybody would have, a school in particular, they would have to generate another 25% power, which would basically go to PG&E, for which they would not be compensated. But once they got to the point where they were generating more than they actually consume in total, they would be paid a wholesale rate for that electricity. So the economics, even with the falling prices and everything, still don't make it an, you know, any kind of incentive to oversize your system.
So I happen to be chair of Silicon Valley Clean Energy, and we're starting service in 2017 mm-hmm. to 11 cities in the unincorporated county of Santa Clara. If we want to encourage our schools to build out further and help us, what sort of policy ought we put in place? Do we give a preferential, treatment to schools? Mm-hmm. For example, I know the wholesale rate that, you know, we're looking at in the desert has been quoted to us at 4 cents per kilowatt hour, but I get that there might be some real benefit we could pass along to schools mm-hmm. and avoid the substantial wheeling charges from, say, Southern California. Right. Can you help us think about that?
This actually came up and is an ongoing discussion in the city of Alameda that's mm-hmm. served by a municipal utility. And they've been somewhat reluctant to encourage the solarization of schools there because it's their biggest client. And mm-hmm. They make the argument that by supporting the schools in that way, they would be actually, somebody else would be subsidizing that. I mean, that's sort of the basic argument. But we kind of come back with the idea that, you know, our schools are the place where we want to invest something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you, I was surprised when I started doing this. I thought that school districts in some of the most affluent cities would also be the most affluent school districts, but that's not always the case. You know,
Cupertino Union School District is a revenue limit district, you know, and one of the best in the state. But because it's high achieving, it really is funded at the floor of all the districts in the state, right? Right.
So one of the ideas that, and I'm sure there's something that can be built on, Marin Clean Energy offered a limited feed-in tariff program. I think it was 2 megawatts, and then they increased it. And as a result, they got a couple of projects built in Marin County. Mm-hmm. I think they were paying 15 or 16 cents a kilowatt hour for the electricity. That might be a little bit too much of a benefit. I mean, somebody would actually have to work the numbers, but a feed-in tariff that for any kind of municipal government, so it wouldn't be just schools, but it would be city, county, that kind of thing, may be a way to provide a consistent price on electricity, both for the community choice program and a fairly good source of regular revenue for the school districts over the, you know, whatever the period of the contract is.
Well, maybe we could talk more offline. I really appreciate the Air District working with you and helping us think through these great-to-have problems. Mm-hmm. And is there a list of districts that have taken you up on your offer? The Air District has helped to subsidize through this. And
sure.
And I'm wondering, a question to staff would be, is our intention to keep going and see what we can do to penetrate those districts who haven't taken us off on this mm-hmm. offer yet?
Mm-hmm. We have a list. I can provide it to Abby, and I'd be glad to talk further with you about that.
Yeah, I appreciate it, because this is one of these things where I think many of us, right, are engaged also in community choice energy, and we'd love to figure out where the right intersection here is and do the right thing by our schools and also for our communities. And so I'm grateful for this initiative of staff. And I don't know, Gene, if you want to comment on, you know, what we have a plan to do this going forward to see if we can help more schools that weren't part of this first tranche to create a master plan.
We've been very, very pleased to be able to work with Tom in Kyoto, USA on this project, and it has so many wins to it. So we are very encouraged and look forward to working with them some more to make sure we multiply this benefit.
Well, you certainly have my full support.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Director Rice.
Thank you very much for the work and for the presentation. A question, is there in your, I'm assuming you do a little bit of scanning sort of the schools that are out there, the footprints, there must be some sites that are better candidates than others based on the facilities and the mm-hmm. footprint and the aspect and all that, and in that way of thinking, I'm thinking there's some low-hanging fruit. There may be some better candidates than others. Are you proactive in terms of reaching out to those candidates or those sites that maybe have more potential and the numbers are going to pencil out even better for that site than another? Mm-hmm. And then in your work with the various schools and school districts, what do you find is the biggest stumbling block or challenge or barrier for a district or a school taking that step mm-hmm. to actually, implement?
So the second question, when we started, we did a pilot with in Berkeley Unified, where we're situated, and the superintendent, it took me several months even to get an appointment with her. And then when I did, she told me that she had 40 things on her to-do list, and I wasn't on the list. You know, she just didn't understand what this had to do with her mission to help educate our children. 6 months later, she sent an email saying, I feel it's my moral and ethical duty to make this happen. I mean, so it's an educational process. School districts are overwhelmed. If you go into a meeting with facilities directors, they're always very quiet because they know the minute they say anything, they're going to wind up getting pulled into this when they've got 100 other things that they have to do. So it's kind of a capacity issue, educational issue. And so by getting into the districts and showing them how they can actually do this without having to involve themselves in the way they think they'll have to, makes it a lot easier to move forward on it. I mean, all the other pieces are there. The financing is there. The footprint from a lot of these schools is ideal for it. I mean, if you go into Piedmont, it's so space constrained there that it's really hard to get projects to work there. But you don't have to go very far into West Contra Costa, Oakland, San Ramon Valley, other school districts to find, a wealth of opportunities to actually do the projects. And the first question was?
About the prime candidates.
Yeah, so working with the district, we sort of focused on the areas, your care areas, or the school districts that had a high number of students that were on free and reduced lunch. We're trying to get to the school districts that are the hardest, really, that need this help the most, rather than the districts that are, but we could. I mean, we can do it in any way. The question is, how do we actually get them to open up the door to have that conversation about it? That's the key to this.
Thank you. This has been... I just started, so you can wait after me. This has been a great presentation. I really appreciate it, and it made my mind just really kind of exploding, all kinds of things that our schools can do. We just approved a $744 million bond for our schools in San Francisco. And I just looked through the expenditure list, and there's not solar. The word mm-hmm. solar doesn't appear once in it. So I know that we have a long way to go in San Francisco. We make these kinds of investments, and we really haven't done it. But now from this meeting, I'm going to be, talking to my friends on the school board and seeing how we can, make our relationship, with our clean power program, one that is going to mm-hmm. make, the program work for both. And then the other thing that I think is really great is that, it's our future generation, our children, and they're getting an understanding about what the climate is going to be like moving forward, and they're worried about it, but it's also really great opportunities for curriculum mm-hmm. and education, as you touched upon as well. So I just really appreciate your presentation, and thank you for your support. Is there a relationship with San Francisco? And
mention that to you. San Francisco is... unusual in that they get their electricity through the San Francisco PUC, and those rates are either subsidized or so low as a result of their procurement contracts that the economics were just really hard to make a reasonable argument for it. I mean, you needed either some other kind of help, either through rebates or some other support, or even political support to try and move the districts, the school district over to even considering it. There's sort of this hard, fast notion that it isn't going to pencil out.
Well, it seems doable if the school district is able to generate some of its own energy use to be able to move whatever the city's providing, the Public Utilities Commission is providing the school to get income from another source, and they have been going other to more private sources to get you know, more income that's not just government sources.
And with the San Francisco Clean Power, there may be opportunities to explore with them as well. I should say on the educational side, it's been remarkable the kinds of things that the installers offer. You know, they're enhancing STEM programs. They're going into academies and bringing the students and the teachers over for two-week-long training programs and everything. It's just been remarkable the kinds of programs that have been added to just the construction project to make this not just a construction project, but actually a community asset. So it's been good.
Great. Thank you. Director Haggerty, sorry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I apologize, but of the, I guess there was 68 school districts assessed. Is that correct?
Altogether. 19 of them with a full solar master plan with the actual data for...
Right, but there were 68 totals assessed.
Right.
So that's correct. And then of that, you had 19... You did 19, correct?
Right.
So was that kind of just a kind of a resource issue? Is that why you only did 19 of the 68?
No, it was just a question of school district interest.
Really?
Yeah. We send out samplers. We send out personal letters. We send out brochures that we had created through this grant to PTAs, board members, and everything, explaining what we were offering to them. And believe me, it isn't because they don't get it. It's just that they just, you know, feel sometimes they just don't have the capacity to deal with one more thing. I mean, any way to encourage that to happen through students or board members to, you know, make contact with us is always welcome. But, I mean, we were there for anyone who wanted to work with us.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes, I mean, you know, we're going through this whole CCA, as you know.
Right.
The whole CCA discussion now, and sometimes I think sustainability does get lost, to be honest with you, in the discussion. I'm dealing with a city right now where I've got a council member that's concerned that she can't run her air conditioner all day. This is that's her objection to why she doesn't want to vote to be in the CCA. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes the sustainability issue does get lost. So sometimes what people come up with is somewhat amazing. So I guess I am a bit, you know, I wish we could figure out a way. So when you did mention this, and I apologize, I spent 45 minutes on the bridge, so the bridge is not flowing very good today. But the 19 districts, did you mention where they were in your presentation? Because I don't want to go backwards.
No. I guess it is in the report, but I didn't mention it. No.
Okay. Did you find that some areas were more accommodating than others? Some areas of the Bay Area?
Can you
maybe expand on that a little bit?
I'd say Marin and San Mateo counties were the most interested, but I have to say that those two counties are also providing support to school districts on a variety of things. And so the introductions that were made by the counties made it a little bit easier for us to actually get started with some of those school districts. I have to tell you that when I first meet with a district, they always wonder when the next shoe is going to fall. They don't quite believe, you know, that this is a service that's being provided to them without any strings. And so having that introduction come from a county staffer that's worked with them on energy efficiency or Prop 39 or something has made it much easier.
So I guess my commitment to you is, to the extent that I can work in my district with the school districts, that would be...
I have a great example for you. Livermore Valley Joint Unified. I'm ready to help them. They're ready to go, but I don't know what's holding them up.
Wow. Okay, and you're lucky because I have an excellent working relationship with the superintendent. So let's go hand in hand and let's go talk to Kelly Bowers because she is very receptive, and you may not, you know,
it may not, there may be somebody below her that just doesn't want to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And Kelly is very receptive. So let's go talk.
Okay, great. Yeah.
I think they just needed a connector guy. So
it helps.
Good job. Yep. Director Barrett, then Director Sinks.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess I'm hearing that through all five of us here, is that we are really, you know, Director Sinks asked, you know, what is the list of school districts that you went to? And that was just followed up by mm-hmm. Director Haggerty. Because I know we have three schools in Petaluma that already have solar, and we could have more. Mm-hmm. And so I think we all want to know, have you reached mm-hmm. out to the schools in our areas? Have there been problems, or, is there any way we can assist this and make this grow?
Great. I'll be happy to share that with you.
Great. Director Sinks?
Yeah, I just had one question. You talked about the water requirements for natural gas producing electricity specifically. What is that? Is that a thermodynamic efficiency? You need a good sink, or are there other reasons for that? Yeah. And do you have a figure of merit how much water it takes typically to produce a kilowatt hour, a megawatt hour?
We do, and I'm happy to share that with you. We had someone up at the Lawrence Berkeley National Labs actually look at all the generation facilities in our service territory. Surprisingly, and this was actually the motivation for doing it, the largest use of water is actually from big hydro. The water sits behind those dams and evaporates, and if it's used to produce electricity, all that water lost is actually counted as a cost, the amount of water that it takes to produce a kilowatt hour of electricity. So the natural gas is really mostly for cooling. They do use some salt water from, estuaries and oceans, but they also use fresh water for that purpose, too. So
to improve thermodynamic efficiency, you need a cold source, and that's primarily what the...
I don't understand all the technology, but the water's pumped through there as a cooling source for the generation of electricity.
Yeah, I would be interested in that. I mean... Okay. We, in Silicon Valley, we've said we're going to be 100% carbon free, right? Mm-hmm. So we are using big hydro as part of that 50% mm-hmm. per the RPS. But so we've decided to not utilize natural gas. But mm-hmm. It'd be good for us to be able to communicate how we're also saving water mm-hmm. in that process.
Okay.
So thank you.
Sure. Okay, Director Rice.
Yeah, one more follow-up on Director Haggerty's the conversation around how to get that door opened and mm-hmm. the access. And you mentioned that in Marin County and I think you said San Mateo. We have relationships with the schools through like our Marin Energy Watch, or is it mm-hmm. Energy Efficiency mm-hmm. Program, right. In which we're providing support and assessments towards efficiency upgrades. And I do think, I'm not sure if, and those are funded, I believe, through PG&E or CPUC grants. I'm not sure if every county has those energy watch things happening, but I do think it's something that the Air District may want to follow up on in terms of trying to support something like that. And I do think, the solar is great and sounds great, but it should be going hand in hand with efficiency upgrades in any of our municipal buildings, whether that's schools or what have you. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that the Air District needs to promote and support as well, because generating green energy and clean energy is great, but we also want to be as efficient with our energy use as possible. So anyway, mm-hmm. I would like to see in our, when we get to that our climate action planner, how much support we're continuing to give public agencies towards both generating green energy and clean energy and also energy efficiencies.
Thank you.
That's a great last comment. Thank you. Mr. Kelly, thank you very much for your presentation and a lot of food for thought and a lot of possibilities. So thank you for your work. We have one card for public comment, and that is Lisa Mason.
Hi, I'm Lisa Mason, and I'm very happy to be here and to see the wonderful work that this committee is doing, and I wanted to speak to support Tom. I met Tom back in 2008, and he and my daughter really spearheaded the effort to put the solar panels on the San Ramon Valley Unified School District. And the project actually started with a family conversation about how we as a family could help the environment or help with climate change. And my son, James, who was in seventh grade at the time, said, you know, maybe we should do fundraising for solar panels on our schools. And we said, you know, that is actually a great idea. And my daughter took that idea and ran with it, did some research, and then found Tom's organization online, Kyoto USA, and emailed him. And we were actually kind of shocked that Tom, you know, as busy as he is, not only took the time to answer her, came out to Monte Vista High School, where my daughter was a junior, to talk to her group of friends, interested kids, faculty. And then they started a project that basically wound up being this, you know, enormous 3.3 megawatt solar system that has just had so many win-wins. I mean, it's just kind of amazing to think back on how that all happened. But, you know, I think one of the really cool things is I ended up going to a lot of the school board meetings because my daughter graduated and went off to college. And the school board, this was not on their radar, and this was not something at all that they were interested in at the beginning. And in 2008, 9, 10, there were so many budget cuts and so much uncertainty that they did not want to undertake some huge capital project. And there was a lot of, I think they were all wondering, you know, who was Tom and what were his motivations really? I think it was really helpful that this started as a student-led project. And it really took, I think, Tom's just truly tireless advocacy to come up with the financing such that the board finally said they realized that it was riskier to not go ahead with the project than to go ahead with the project. And again, there have been so many win-wins. I mean, Tom's slide, you know, I went on the district website yesterday, and they're talking about $5.1 million in general fund savings generated in the first 4 years of the project, and the 17,700 tons of CO2 emissions. And what was really cool also is I went back to another school board meeting last year, and to see the change in the school board, they were so eager to start with solar 2.0, they said. They came up with the clean renewable energy bonds. And then they're going to finance solar panels in 15 more schools in the district. It's just amazing. And just to see the reverberations, you know, the ripple effect. My kids now, my son is studying mechanical engineering as a senior at USC, wants to work in the renewable energy, And my daughter's getting her PhD in marine biology at Stanford, wanting to work on climate change in the oceans. And she has other school kids contacting her. How can we do this in our school district? It's just been a wonderful win-win. So thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you. That's what it's all about. Great. Great comments. Okay, so we'll end this item. Again, thank you, Mr. Kelly, for your presentation and for your work. We'll go on to, let's actually do our minutes. So item number three, colleagues, any comments, questions on our minutes? Okay. Motion from Director Haggerty, seconded by Director Rice, and we can take that without objection and go on to our next item.
Yes, Vice Chair Avalos, Lisa Pisano, our communications officer, will give you an overview of our recent Climate Forward Bay Area Forum. Thank you.
Good morning, Vice Chair Avalos and members of the Climate Protection Committee. I'll be providing you an overview of our recent Climate Forward Bay Area Leadership Forum. Our event, Climate Forward Bay Area, a Leadership Forum, took place on Thursday and Friday, October 13th and 14th. Following the event, we sent out an electronic survey to attendees. We were very pleased with the responses and comments that we received back. 86% felt that the two-day event and the conversations that it sparked were valuable, and attendees appreciated and enjoyed Greg Dalton's moderating style during the first plenary session. We clearly heard that our audience appreciated that we included the plenary on energy, water, and waste. And we had a specific call out for our board members who moderated our breakout sessions, and they were very pleased with that as well. In general, attendees thought the conversational style of our panels and the facilitated discussions worked well with the topics. We received high marks for the opening plenary, setting the stage with Dr. Chris Field, ARB's Mary Nichols, State Senator Fran Pavley, and Green for All's Vian Trung, and for our closing keynote with CNN political commentator Van Jones. We also were able to hear from our active community groups and concerned students, each who had a unique perspective on climate change, and they were able to bring their thoughts on addressing it to our forum on Friday morning. All four of our breakout sessions were very well attended, and we received high marks for the conversations that were prompted through these sessions. I want to thank Supervisor Scott Hegarty for moderating the transportation housing session, and to Supervisor Katie Rice for moderating the water conservation breakout sessions. Those sessions were very well attended, and we got high marks on both of them. Van Jones' closing keynote was a highlight of our attendees. Mr. Jones struck the right note as with his one up and one down observation. He told the audience that if you're the one down, there are sore spots and pain, and if you are one up, then there's blind spots. His advice was to be able to say more, listen. Let me listen better, and when I have blind spots, wake up and say more. And so I think that all of his conversations resonated very well with our audience. He said, to solve these issues, like climate change, we need to have a leader who's willing to move and a movement willing to happen. Mr. Jones reminded the attendees that it requires respect on both sides, and there are two kinds of technology. There is data and there is wisdom. He told the audience that today the future is written in computer code in Silicon Valley, and we will need to affirm wisdom into these technologies to make the kind of transformational change that is necessary. And as you can see here, these were comments from attendees who filled out our survey, and everyone really had glowing things to say about his remarks. We also had some lessons learned. We received feedback regarding the aspects of the forum that attendees thought could be improved. The lowest rating for any of our sessions was the technology and transportation plenary. That was on Thursday afternoon, which received an overall 57% rating. The comments regarding that plenary were primarily directed at what the audience heard from MTC's Steve Heminger. Commenters mentioned that it seemed he wasn't driving the message of the forum, connecting his comments to climate change, and seemed to simply be promoting new ways to continue driving rather than ways to reduce our energy consumption. Commenters mentioned that we also heard from attendees that they wanted to learn more about emerging technologies, although during the energy breakout, one of the panelists, Ben Choi, told the audience that innovation doesn't have to be new technology. It can simply be a new way of doing things. One commenter thought we should have invited more elected officials, although we had many of you all there. And there was a feeling that the audience and speakers could have been representationally more diverse. Finally, we had a commenter who was disappointed that the forum didn't address fracking or the climate impacts of animal agriculture. But these were certainly a lot less comments than we received on the positive side, people who were quite pleased with the event and thought that it actually did a lot to spark the conversation throughout the region. So here's the situation by the numbers. The board approved $300,000 for the forum, which was allocated in the 2016-17 budget. We were able to bring in $66,000 both in direct cash and in-kind sponsorships. We had 325 registered attendees, but 275 who actually came, and they came to both days. And that kind of translates to the cost per attendee was $664 per day, which is less than the cost per attendee for our 2009 Climate Summit. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Director Sinks, what's up?
So, as you know, I was profoundly moved by Van Jones' talk.
Yes.
And it went beyond any specific... He was able to focus it on our work as an air district, but the topics go far beyond that. And I wondered if we might secure permission to publish that video online.
We are working on that. We're actually working on with the three plenary sessions and Mr. Van Jones' speech. We're working on having like a brown bag here at the district that we could invite people to listen to that and then generate discussion. And then once we've done that, post that online. And so we're still working on the logistics of that.
I would have to tell you, I think that video has such broad applicability. If we had to put some more money into secure rights to be able to do that, I would find that money well spent. As you know, I've had an opportunity to share that privately in a situation where we had a gender equality problem in one of our high schools on a robotics team. And I think it was such a moving message. I think it deserves wider play. And I've looked online and I haven't really found any comparable talk that he's given that's in the public domain. So thank you. And thank you for having the idea to invite him. I was a bit skeptical, but it exceeded all my expectations by far, as did the whole conference. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you.
Makes me sorry that I wasn't able to make it. Any other comments? Director Haggerty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lisa, I'm not sure if you heard me yesterday, but I gave you kudos on how wonderful the event was. I found it to be excellently? Is that a Bushism?
I think that's a quailism, actually.
It's quailism.
It's too many syllables.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could just say we won big on this.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. It's big league. We all have to learn how to talk again. Confusing with our leaders. No, I spoke yesterday about how well it was ran, and I found it to be very collaborative, and the speakers were excellent, and I think you deserve great kudos in how well it was ran. I gave Jack a little bit, but he didn't really do anything. But I think you did a great job, and I think it was a well-ran event, and I hope that we do it again. I'm sure we can't, not something we can do every year, but I'd like to see us do it every couple years. I thought it was great.
Excellent. Thank you.
Dr. Rice.
Yeah, and my kudos and thanks as well. But I'm also looking at the last slide. So the by the numbers, are those numbers what we budgeted for and what we forecast in terms of attendance and cost per attendee and sponsorships and any lessons learned towards either, did we meet our own expectations? And if not, what will we do the next go around? Because I do think it was really valuable. I would have liked to have seen more people there. But anyway, your thoughts, Lisa?
Well, we did find that we were really aiming to bring more of the technology sector into the forum and had big expectations of bringing them more broadly into this. And that was really challenging. One, because a two-day conference for the technology world here in Silicon Valley just was not practical for them. And secondly, it was prior to the election, and everybody who was actively working on things like this was actively working on individual pieces of measures that they were trying to get through. And so I think we have to rethink who we might direct this kind of conference to and who we might bring in. I think in the future it might be wise if we wanted to bring in, for instance, the technology sector, that we do something that's a half day or maybe a longer luncheon period. And do it a single topic at a time rather than a full two-day or one-day event. And I think we need to think about who we go out more broadly and look maybe beyond the Bay Area to who we might bring in to have a climate conversation, because it's not what we can do right here in the Bay Area. It's what we can kind of do on an even larger region. And I think that that's a direction we could explore in the future.
And I would add, too, I think important to look at the calendar in terms of what else is on the agenda in the Bay Area with conferences, et cetera. I think, I want to say ABAG's doing something or in the, somewhere. Anyway, look at the calendar and where's a good fit time-wise. I think it was, yeah, it would have been great if more people could have taken advantage of it because it really was valuable. And I would love to have see if we can leverage that Van Jones speech. It was really great. And I'm sure we paid him.
We did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are working on that.
Director Haggerty?
Just curious, Lisa, how many scholarships did we wind up issuing?
Actual scholarships, I would say we did probably on the order of 75.
Okay, because there was a speaker yesterday that kind of took a swipe at us about the cost of the event, and it would be nice for us to be able to say, well, there was some scholarships given out.
There was actually quite a few scholarships, and not only scholarships, but we also then went back and we gave extremely discounted rates to others who had expressed concern over the cost. And so the number of discounted rates that we gave was even greater than that.
Okay. So when you say scholarships, you're saying free?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for your presentation and congratulations on your event. I wasn't able to make it, but it sounds like I missed something really, really big. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it. My life is a logistical nightmare. So we have one card for public comment. Mr. Holtzman. Yeah, we you're a star in our presentation.
I guess being under 45 has its benefits when folks are trying to represent the youth. No, I'm just kidding. it's nice to be here. I do hope that it's compiled in some video format that you can see. I think that clearly 350 Bay Area was fairly jaundiced in terms of their view of this conference in advance. And I think we and most attendees were pleasantly surprised at the tenor of most of the discussions. Notoriously bad at filling out those evaluations, but glad to see that people's responses pretty much comport with ours. Greg Dalton and David Baker's conversations were great, especially Greg Dalton's panel really brought folks into the room who weren't actually there for the remainder of the conference, which was really important. Also, the transportation talk, just a second, that was, you know, shocking. And I think a lot of people like myself didn't even fill this out, but I mean, just a second. I've always been someone who, whenever the Air District or its staff is saying, let's work on transportation stuff, what can we do on transit? I'm like, that is the one thing that is not your responsibility. Why don't you let someone else do that? Now, after seeing how they are talking, I am terrified, and I'm actually hoping that we can partner and figure out how to either change the leadership, which is not your job, my job, but how we can get those who are in charge of transportation emissions to actually get out of the 80s. That would be really important. Van Jones was fantastic. Agree with those comments. The only critique that I would say, which maybe isn't reflected here, is that I think the breakouts, at least I could only go to one, but it was a little skimmy, and it would have been great in that moment to dig a little bit deeper. I do want to thank you in general, thank your staff, for the changes that were made following our letter to the committee and to the board. Tickets were provided to grassroots organizations to send one or two representatives, which is greatly appreciated. Now, I think a lot of the grassroots organizations had already made the decision to disengage at that point, and maybe the word didn't get out to all of them. But movement was made. I think having the students there speaking on the second morning was really valuable for folks in the room. Again, there were very little youth there, and those were very inspiring students and great networking. So just wanted to follow up my last comment on this with a nicer comment, and thank you for the changes and compliment the conference.
Great, thank you. And we have no more cards. Any other member of the public like to comment on our conference? Okay, so we'll close public comment and go to Our next item, which is member comments or other business. Colleagues, anything to bring up? I will bring up something. This is my last Climate Protection Committee meeting, so I just want to say thank you for this opportunity to serve on this committee. It's been a really great experience for me, and being on the Air District has been a really great experience, and it's been great to work with you all, colleagues. Thank you. I'll be back somewhere. I'll probably be over in that side of the other room. I'll be back at other future meetings. Yeah, just the climate protection one. I was the chair of this committee in the past. So,
Vice Chair, thank you also for your contributions and your leadership, especially on this committee.
Thank you.
I agree. I'd like to say that I've enjoyed working with you. I find you very knowledgeable, and I've really enjoyed working with you.
Thank you. It's equally shared with everyone here. The time and place of our next meeting is January 19th, 2017, and with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.